wanted more from life than four kids and a wife and a job in a dark Kentucky mine. A 20-acre farm with a shacky house and barn, that's all I had and all I left behind.
Welcome to episode 59 of Breaking In with a very special guest today. First of all, I'm Annie.
Cheryl.
If you didn't already know that, I don't really know why we do that every show.
Because some people might just be listening to this show only.
Oh, that's true.
And at some point, one of you is going to be sick and you're going to have Steven Spielberg as guest.
Yeah. Right, guest host. Right. So right.
It's probably more likely going to be you.
Guest host, yeah.
It's a guy named Steven Spielberg, but he spells it with two E's.
Our guest today, Colin Turner.
Hey.
Improv actor and small town Kentucky boy.
Oh, yeah.
I guess that's where we got to start. How do you go from Kentucky to here?
Wow. I guess it all sort of started when my mom put me on stage in church. Me and my brother and sister would sing on stage. And then I remember being in the talent shows as a kid. And before I knew it, I was in eighth grade quoting every movie line from Will Ferrell.
Did you do the whole every play thing in school?
Well, up until a certain point, and then I played football for a minute, and then I actually quit football so I could do more play stuff.
So you got the bug early?
Yes.
Okay, so where'd you go to college?
Western Kentucky University.
Do they have a good acting program there?
They actually do.
Shut up! I wouldn't have guessed that.
As far as Kentucky goes, it's kind of a good place to do theater. If you go to Louisville, that's where a lot of stuff like gets screened before they take it to New York. And Western actually has like probably the NKU and Western have really, really strong theatrical programs. Words aren't coming out of my mouth anymore, but yeah.
And so I assume you're doing, you know, theater-based material. When did the improv and comedy sort of come in?
Oh gosh, that's as old as when I was 13. I took humanities with Mrs. Barlow, who was like, I'll never forget this woman because she was like 4'11". She walked with a cane. She had all these, like, Eastern philosophies that she liked to quote, and she was just a trip all the time. And anyway, she taught a Whose Line Is It Anyway club after school.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so at the age of 13 was really when I started doing improv. And in high school, there was a long-dead improv club, so I sort of revived that. And we never actually did a show. But every day, or once a week after school, we met and worked on all kinds of improv games and improv scenes and stuff like that.
And did you even know what improv was at that point?
I mean, I had a decent concept of short form. Mm-hmm. It was mostly Whose Line Is It Anyway games.
Right.
But through that, you end up playing various long form games and start to kind of get introduced to that. But I never really understood until I got to college and joined the improv team there, which was Happy Gas, which is still running. It is actually the longest running improv troupe in Kentucky.
That's got to be somewhere on the board, somewhere.
In your hat.
On the leaderboard for that one, people, I'm sure.
We've been around for like 12 years, I think, so that's record-breaking in Kentucky.
You know, it's funny. It's funny you're talking about this because there's high schools over in PV that actually, both the high schools there have improv groups of about, and literally it's 30 to 40 kids who join.
Okay,
it, and they put on for the whole school. But yeah, I was like, that's the first time I've ever seen it, and you talking about it is like, well, I don't know why they don't do that more. They should.
Yeah, but that troupe was the one who had Truth in Comedy as like our required reading to be on the team, and that's what we like taught from and whatnot. So that's the first time I really started to understand long-form improv, and we sort of coached ourselves on the Harold method.
when
I have no idea what you're talking about, by the way. I'm not sure if anybody else does. But.
That's okay. The Herald method is like, it's the iOS signature form. It's sort of like, I don't know, like to say Tennessee Williams is like the bone structure for old Southern plays.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
It's like our signature piece that we use long-form improvisation with, which is basically just a way of gathering scenes in order to hopefully realize a thematic thing.
So I
gotcha. It's a collection of scenes put together in a specific way. It's just a specific form that iOS has been doing since like the 50s with Del Close and the committee.
Going back to, okay, so being 13 and getting into improv, at this point you gotta have you know, sort of comedians influencing you. Where was your comedy sort of
Who
inspired you at that point?
Well, like, as a kid, my dad was obviously in control of that, just like all of our dads are, because he's the one who exposed me to the most stuff. But I would say the biggest thing that influenced me as a young kid was Monty Python.
Huh.
My dad, I had memorized Monty Python and the Holy Grail by, like, age 12. And I remember my friend and I had a couple girls over one time, and we watched this show, and these two girls were just talking through it, and I was just like, oh my god, shut up! And I just remember yelling at him through the movie, and I looked
I don't want to get laid, I want to watch Monty Python.
Like, what a nerd I was, like, chastising these girls for talking through this movie that I thought
like
was so amazing.
Star Wars, I can see, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But once I got old enough to, like, memorize the movies and quote them and use that to get in with girls and things like that and the popular kids, that was always Chris Farley movies, Will Ferrell movies,
the broader,
absolutely,
yeah.
Yeah,
slapstick, a little bit slapstick,
because I'm sure much like the high school I went to, most of the popular people were dumbasses anyway, so.
Absolutely. I remember there's a little thing that my sixth grade teacher gave us, which was like our warm fuzzy sheet. And you passed it around, and everybody wrote something nice about you. And my cousin Ben wrote down, I like when you make me laugh, especially when you choke yourself. Because that was like my signature bit in sixth grade, was to put both hands to my throat. Like, anytime, you know, we got a new assignment or something like that. So, I don't know. It's just funny. You're right. Stupid little things, that's all it takes.
Yeah, but it kept it going.
Yeah.
Then, okay, so you graduate from college.
Yep.
And then you still...
With an acting degree? What's your degree actually?
In theater with a minor in music theater.
Okay, so you weren't getting a job, period, coming out of college.
Yeah. So Burger King in Kentucky.
I had a very clear idea what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And, I spent the summer at in Cincinnati working at Pompilio's Italian restaurant, where I had worked a couple times, and just basically paid all the credit card debt I had amassed in college off, and got ready to move out here.
Well, and we should point out that, I mean, in terms of the Midwest, it's not a huge city, but even though you were in Kentucky, you were right across the river from Cincinnati, so
yes.
It's not like you're backwoods.
Like
you could have went. You really could have just like hop skipped and found some place to actually practice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Truth be told, I'm like smack in the middle between city and country life, because you can drive a half hour south and there are people who raise cattle, and you can drive a half hour north and there are people who don't own cars because they just walk to their building.
Right.
Like they live right in downtown Cincinnati.
Right.
Right.
And from my back porch, you can see downtown. So you really get kind of the best of both worlds, even though it's only a 15,000-person town.
Right.
But you decided it was going to be better to make this leap rather than test it out.
I always wanted to be in movies ever since I decided that, you know, theater was what I really wanted to pursue and follow. And comedy was just the most fruitful route. I really decided in college that I really, really just wanted to do improv because it was just so much fun.
And it's tough.
Yeah, it's not easy.
That's tough training,
yeah,
as far as
sure.
I'm concerned, for a comedian to... I mean, it's bad enough getting up there on stage and telling jokes.
Absolutely.
To wing it.
I know people who have been doing it for 10 years and they still... Yeah. They still don't get it.
Say no more.
It's just like any other art form, I think. You know, it's like opera.
You're either good. I think it's. I think of it like computer skill. You love computers. Or you hate. You know.
Yeah,
you're,
for sure.
You
know you're what I mean? Either your brain's either wired to it or it's not.
Well, I mean, I can never do. Improv is essentially writing on the fly.
Yeah,
I mean, that's tough.
You're writing, directing, acting, all at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm much more planned. I need things thought out. I need rewrites.
We need rewrites.
Yeah, I agree. So that's very hard, very difficult.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I assume it's a tough muscle to sort of keep up. I mean, you.
Well, that's why I think improv would be the best one to work out that muscle. I mean, because you're not going to get a lot of stand-up gigs if you were going to go that way.
To a certain extent, I mean, I think if your predisposition to it, like, I think I could take 2-3 years off and still come back and be really strong. I don't know if that's me being.
Have you done stand-up?
Big-headed about myself or what? Yes, I have done stand-up. I did it a decent bit in college and actually organized a couple stand-up nights and went around the town of Bowling Green, Kentucky in several venues, which led to some of the most ridiculous memories of my life. We performed at a place called Wabba's, which is like wabba, 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 like a motorcycle.
Okay.
And this place, it's a trip. It's got this huge wraparound bar in the middle of it, and then it also has a wraparound grill where you can cook your own steak.
Okay, that's pretty sweet. Now I want to go there.
Meat fridge where you walk over and you like pick out your steak and you give it to the girl.
That's sick.
It's a trip. But anyway.
And that's all going on while you're trying to, well, there are people on
absolutely.
Stage. Okay, that's great.
At one
that's
point during
good.
The show, the bartender, we did a stand-up and an improv set. So we started with stand-up and then finished with improv. At one point during the show, the bartender just started screaming, "We can't hear you! Uh-huh. What? Talk louder!"
Oh my God.
During the stand-up set, two of the really drunk guys in the front row just started mooing and didn't stop mooing for like 45 seconds inexplicably.
Oh my God, that's harsh. That's like some that's heckling to its max, I would think.
For sure.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good times. So you come out here, you have the plan to come out here.
I should mention I got this degree in theater with a minor in music theater, and the plan wasn't necessarily to come out here and become a movie star. I've been in love with my high school sweetheart since I was 17, and I said to her before we decided to move, because she wanted to go to grad school, I said, pick New York, Chicago, or L.A., and we'll figure it out from there. So I think if I went to New York, I would have been working on stage performance more so.
Right.
And if I went to Chicago, it would be almost 100% improv focused.
Right.
So it wasn't necessarily the plan, I guess, is my point.
Well, I mean, you had a plan to pursue the career.
Absolutely.
I mean, and if you're
you were looking more for movies, which here, obviously, is a better place to be.
Totally better for improv.
I think no matter what you're doing, I think L.A. is going to have the most opportunity.
Right.
We have the most improv theaters. We have the most, really, stages for scenic performance as well, theatrical performance, and, of course, the most film opportunities.
Right.
Of
Agreed.
Course.
Agreed. We say that all the time for writers.
Yeah.
Being in the place where you should be.
So you come out here, you decide on coming out here, and then what's your first move? When you get out here and you decide... Well,
you didn't have a job. I'm assuming you didn't have a job.
I did not have a job.
Nobody had a job.
No. We had.
I'm sure Beth knew what she was doing for school.
Beth had worked at U.S. Bank over the summer.
Okay.
And I had worked at Pompilio, so we had saved up money from that. And then we also knew that we'd get school loans when she started.
Right.
And rather than move straight to L.A., we moved to Pomona, which is like 10 minutes from... Laverne, where Beth goes to school for psychology. And I was commuting an hour in to take improv classes. But it took me like 6 months to actually get the improv classes going, because my plan was to get here, get a little bit settled, and find a job,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which didn't pan out. I got hired by a company that was like, it wasn't necessarily a scam. I mean, I'm sure they would have paid you or something. But it was like this pyramid thing. Like, you got there at like 6:30 in the morning. They basically had you selling like discounted movie tickets and like movie packages. It was door-to-door sales.
Right.
Businesses. Harsh.
Three-piece suit. I actually worked on the day that the thermometer broke at 113 in downtown in a three-piece suit. And when I actually went to get my money, they didn't have any record of me ever working there.
Yeah.
But I kind of like just toiled away at that. That was terrible. And
I wish I knew you then. I would have totally told you to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah, for sure. I only spent 2 days there.
Oh, okay. Thank God. You
so
figured out.
I was like, you're a smart boy. This is the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
And on my birthday, my parents and Beth went in to get me level one at IO. And so that's when I started taking improv classes out here. And eventually I was coming to IO enough that I was driving out 3 or 4 times a week,
mm-hmm.
and using all this gas, so much so that it made more sense to move here and have Beth commute out there.
Right.
And that's when we moved to Hollywood.
And that, of course, led to contacts and other things that were going on.
I would say
connected,
I owe pretty much everything to IO West.
Well, and for people who don't know, being out here, I mean, it's huge. There's there's groups going every night, right? Two or three groups a night,
and there's countless theaters. I mean,
right,
just the big four is like UCB, IO West, Second City, Groundlings.
There's Groundlings out here too, right?
Yeah, those four are out here. But then there's,
a gazillion, after that.
Those are the
next
four
level
big
down.
Ones.
Those
yeah.
are the four ones that everybody knows. And right. then there's People's Improv Theater, there's West Side, there's Comedy Sports, there's, you know, and they all have their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Comedy Sports only does short form. But, yeah, so.
Opportunities.
For
it's
sure.
Just
right.
getting the opportunities.
And having, you know, the getting in at IO West is huge in a couple of ways, because number one, because it's so big and there's so many people, you can go, I know people in IO West that you don't know.
Yeah.
Because they do stuff at like another theater.
Right, which is amazing
day.
To me that yep. it's
and
big enough.
And it's not
that.
Only networking on a social level, or I'm sorry, on a business level, it's also social. I met you because Stacy, who's been on the show before, posted a that I was looking for a roommate.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like, and she posted it on the iOS, like, message board or whatever
iOS
you guys
skill
book.
Because we were literally, we had talked about, we needed to literally target a specific, we're not going to go on Craigslist.
Yeah.
We're going to target a specific type of person, somebody in the industry that totally should be what Manny is partnered
with. You
ended
up with the coolest dude.
I know, totally. They are, actually.
And you're living with a genius. So I'm really hoping it all pans out.
Write me a movie already.
Oh, we're going to do that. Trust me.
But yeah, it's great over there. I mean, when you weigh the differences between the theaters, the reasons I picked IO is just basically accessibility. When I got in there, I was able to get the internship, which helped me paid for my classes.
A paid internship? Oh, it went towards
it went
your...
toward
oh,
my
nice,
classes,
nice.
So it's not paid, but...
No, but that's still, that
yeah.
is like money.
Discount.
Yeah.
And then within my first level, I was able to start a team and start playing in the smaller theaters that are there at IO. And I don't know how quick it was, but within like 6 months, I was on a main stage team. Simply because a friend of mine who had been taking classes through the levels with me had started his team, and they went straight to the main stage, and after a while they needed somebody and asked me.
That's amazing. Okay,
just for people who don't kind of understand the flow of improv and IO, but can you kind of just sort of explain the levels and the classes and
sure.
and sort of how you get in?
Basically, you go and you sign up for level one. That's
and
how
anybody
you start.
Can sign up for level one.
Anybody can sign up for level one. No prerequisites whatsoever. But if you did go to class at UCB or Second City, I think you can start in at level 2 or level 3.
Okay.
Something like that.
Depending.
But there are 7 levels in total. The first one is the basics of improv. The second one is like group scene work. Third one is like getting to know yourself. They've changed since I've been in there. But there's one on working on a form and learning all the different forms that they work on and focusing on the Herald that I talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you've gone through all the levels, you're a graduate, and by level 5, you can start auditioning for the Herald teams, which are like the core of the IO stage shows.
Right.
And once you're on there, you can start, you usually get put on the DCT and have to work your way up to the main stage. And once you're in there, you can start coaching and even potentially teaching. And yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good path, a good plan.
But if you don't want to go the Herald route, there's also opportunities for any type of show. There's sketch on Sundays. Mm-hmm. There's stand-up whenever. There's nights specifically devoted to stand-up. If you have a unique form, you can take it to the stage. Lots of level 7 teams develop their own form and take it to the stage. So yeah, really, if you've got a show and you take it to James Grace, the artistic director, he'll listen and decide whether he wants to put you up or not.
Nice. Well, plus it sounds like trying out everything, and you could find out what you're good at.
Exactly.
Like, where else
yeah.
are you gonna be able to try?
You
a
can
smidge
audition
of everything.
For the sketch teams,
exactly,
and the
exactly
improv teams, and the you know, there's even opportunities for singing.
Oh, that's funny.
There's a lot of musical improv groups.
Well, I know you can also, and I think what other people don't know, which I just recently found out, you can also sort of, Stacy was explaining the process to me, but you can pretty much audition as a writer as well for some.
Absolutely.
For some groups. And you don't even have to go up on stage.
All the sketch teams are open to just people who want to write. And then I think if you want to audition as just a performer, you can do that too.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of people audition as both.
Gotcha.
Yeah, you just submit your packets.
That's great.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, here's what I have been wondering since I first saw your show.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mean Drunkards and Dragons,
yeah, Drunkards
right?
and Dragons. Plus, after meeting everybody coming over to your apartment,
mm-hmm.
you all have huge egos. Everybody's got... Well, obviously, you have to. You're going to go out on stage as a comedian and put yourself out there like that. Fuck yeah.
Right.
You're going to have a big ego.
I think
ego.
The most important thing is confidence. And
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
It comes with a little swagger, I
so
suppose.
So everybody you hang out with has pretty much the same mindset. Some a little higher.
Yep.
Some know how to keep it to themselves a little bit more. But it's just funny that to work together in that large of a group with everybody having such a huge ego and nobody in charge, I could see nothing getting done. Nothing. I don't understand how that happens.
It's a lot like fireworks. I mean, it's hard to contain, but sometimes it's beautiful to watch.
Okay.
And I think improvisers have a lot of reputation for showing up late,
mm-hmm.
sometimes squabbling, teams break
yes.
up,
hurt feelings,
people leave,
yes.
New people come in, yada, yada, yada. But I try to be the exact opposite of that. I like to be crisply on time.
You are.
I take it extremely serious. When I get a note, I try to remember it as hard as I can. You know, I think about it when I'm done. I think about what I can bring to the team to help it.
Mm-hmm.
I even think of exercises that we can do to specifically target things that aren't going as strong, so that if our coach is late, we have something to do to work on in the meantime. For me, it's an art form just like anything else.
Right, right.
And I think whatever you bring to it is what you're going to get out of it.
It's not, you're not supposed to be going there for just for fun.
Absolutely.
And it's actually kind of amazing because just from what we've seen in the screenwriting world and just from what we've seen in the acting world, it's the same thing. I mean, it's like...
Oh, every writer has too big of an ego. Every writer thinks their shit is the best. And
yeah. And I mean, it's not only that. We know writers that have been in the business, you know, 12, 15 years and still don't get it.
Yeah.
Just like what you're saying. I mean, I think they always say that talent rises to the top in this town. And it's slow to rise, but it's pretty obvious when you look at the majority of competition out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, your chances go a lot higher once you see what your competition is.
There's a lot
you can tell that where you are with everybody else. It's still about getting it seen by somebody
for sure
in the right position to
and
get you there.
And not only getting it seen, but when you're getting it seen, you've got your shit together.
Right, right.
Like, that is
you're not
so
flubbing it.
Big.
Yeah.
Like, if you're prepared, if you're ready, and you execute when it's time to pull that trigger, it's just, you sail. You feel on top of the world when
right.
that shit happens. And that's how you should feel. And if you're not there, I think you feel that way.
I think what's hard about this is once you make your first mistake, it shakes you so badly that to get back on your... Forget about it. Keep going.
Yeah,
you
for
know,
sure.
I could see you going, God damn it, I joked. You know.
I think those mistakes shock you into never making them again.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Sure.
Hopefully.
Sure.
Hopefully. But for the most, for the most part, there's a lot of people out here that, you know, everybody wants to be in the entertainment business, but 99% don't know that it's a business.
Yeah.
And so they fuck around and think that talent's going to be enough, or mistakenly believe the realism of their talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
The reality is, like, starting as a writer, starting as an actor, starting as whatever out here is like starting a new business. Say you wanted to sell a custom-made muffin tin.
Right.
You know, it's just like building that company from the ground up. You're going to go a couple of years probably without any profit in the company.
Yep.
And you're going to have to put more of yourself out than you get back. That's
yeah.
just the facts.
And that's I think it's funny when I hear somebody say, well, you know, I came out here, I figured I'd give it 6 months, a year, and see what...
Ugh,
you know what? You're going to be so disappointed.
So many people go home after a year.
I know.
It's like you didn't even get a taste. You
no.
barely dipped your foot in the water.
No, exactly.
I mean, the old adage is that it's going to take 10 years to find success in this town.
Well, just think, how long did it take you to really become best friends with your first friend?
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe when you were kids it took a while. Maybe a college relationship's a better example. But, like, you don't become friends with somebody overnight.
Right.
And you need friends.
Right.
You need
a
friends
lot
out here.
Of friends, yes,
exactly.
Absolutely.
It takes a while to make some friends, and that's what does it. Connections.
And that's the first part. It's getting, and then it's easier to make friends when you have friends recommending.
Absolutely.
Get your shit yeah. read or get somewhere.
Yeah. 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 I mean, and, you know, it always comes back to, it's the same thing for you. When you go on auditions, it's the same thing for us when we go to pitch meetings. It's somebody who's going to believe in you and your idea.
Yeah.
Or you and your abilities or you and your talent.
Yep.
I mean, I'm sure, because I know you have a manager. And I know you're doing a lot of agency meetings at this point.
Yep.
But, you know, I'm not saying this insulting, but I mean, you're a big guy. You don't fit the normal sort of A-list leading man type.
For sure.
And I mean, obviously you get that a lot.
But he fits every best friend in every movie.
Yeah, that's
every
true.
Best
that's
friend
true.
In every movie.
Type.
That is, I'm sorry, but that... He would literally work more than a big name because they can only play that. So, literally, yeah, he's every best friend.
And it's got to be going. I mean, it's kind of the elephant in the room. But I mean, auditions have to be just mentally brutal.
It's
because,
like going on a job interview every single time, and that scares. I would be sick.
Like ultimately, when we walk into a room, it's going to be dependent on our writing and the idea.
Yeah.
But they have to actually listen to us speak. You're immediately judged just walking through the door, and you
yeah,
haven't even said
anything.
Right, right.
I mean, the reality is you're not judged when you walk through the door. You're judged way before that.
That's
you're
true.
Judged by the picture that they saw online. You're
mm-hmm.
judged by the quality of your profile that's online. You're judged by the representation that you keep,
mm-hmm.
Because everybody has a reputation in Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
and they may think certain things about your manager or whoever's representing you.
Right.
You get judged when you walk down the hallway by the other actors who may say something in the room. You never know. They
mm-hmm.
might know that person
mm-hmm.
well. You get judged by the person who's taking the names down. I feel like sometimes I've gotten jobs because security has said something good about me.
That's funny.
Right? And then, I mean, you've been judged like 8 times before you ever get inside the room. And sometimes when you get inside that room, there's a person behind the camera operating.
Right.
There's a person who's in charge of the audition who's just kind of like walking people through.
And then there might be up to 8 producers chilling on a couch, just like watching, never saying anything to you, never introducing themselves.
Oh my god.
And then there's also potentially somebody running all the computer lights, stuff like that.
Okay, so you literally walk in the room, you say, hi, I'm blah, blah, blah.
You usually
say... And
then
what? Or do you have... They give you something to read? Or
yeah, usually the night before you get your sides.
Okay.
Some days you go in with absolutely nothing. And you're like, well, we'll see what happens.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Sometimes they have you improvise, which for me is nothing. Like, I don't mind at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, I love improvised auditions because I don't have to memorize something the night before.
Right.
And sometimes they just want to see you. They just want to have you come in and say, hi, I'm Colin Turner, or...
Make sure you don't talk like this.
Yeah, or whatever it is. Or they'll ask you, like, a personal story.
Uh-huh.
Just whether they can connect with whatever it is. Yeah, sometimes it's just literally, like, especially for commercials where you might just pop up behind a wall or something, you know? Like, they don't need to hear anything. Or,
right.
I mean, I've done some silly physical auditions. I did a Droplets commercial. And audition, and we were in, like, those CGI fat suits. Like, pretending like we were in the CGI fat suits.
Right.
And we, like, climbed a fence and then got hit by a imaginary farmer 3 times and then fell down to the ground. And that was our audition. Like, we didn't have any lines or anything. Yeah, okay. I mean, I've done some ridiculous
things. I thought
you did
great at that, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I can see you doing that.
Well, I mean, and I know your personality, but... You know, living with you, but I mean, it sounds like it's not even really, you don't even really think about it anymore.
I mean, it never really, like, has been an issue. I've never gone into an audition nervous.
Right.
I've gone into an audition shitting my pants because I didn't prepare enough. But that's a totally different feeling.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Being unprepared is like, God damn it, fuck myself. But I never am worried about the people liking me or whatever, because if they don't, fuck them. And
they're probably gonna.
People do.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
I mean, maybe that's that goes back to that confidence, swagger. The only insult I ever tended to field in, like, high school and stuff was arrogance, which you kind of need.
You know, I get that all the time, too. It's very annoying. But...
Oh, hey.
When you're awesome, when you can use it. Yeah.
Well,
we're lying.
And there's always the, I mean, yeah, it goes back to what you're saying with confidence, but it's like, you know, I always tell people when we talk about pitching that at that one moment, you're the expert in the room.
Yeah.
There's no other person in that room that's...
They know your script better than you.
They might be more knowledgeable about the business. They might be better writers. They might be better directors. They might be better actors. They might be whatever. But at that one moment when you're pitching your idea, there is no one who's more of an expert than you.
I wish that I could say it was as glorified as that. But the reality is more so that you have the talent, you have the ability, you absolutely could do this part convincingly.
Mm-hmm.
It's just whether or not you're it.
Right.
And that could be a feeling in the casting director.
Absolutely subjective.
That could be, you know, the picture in their head. Whatever it is, that could just be your performance that day. But you just got to bring it and hope that you fit the bill.
Yeah. That we talk about that all the time. That everything is subjective. So, you know, you write something you think is the coolest thing, but it doesn't mean somebody reads it and thinks it's the coolest thing.
I think it's a weird thing for actors to have to get over, too, thinking your talent does not matter.
No.
Not all the time. It's not. It's that is not 100% all you need. That is not.
It's
gonna do it.
It's a small factor.
Yes.
It has to be there, but once you've got it, it doesn't really matter anymore.
Right.
Because everybody there has that talent.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's in that room because they were talented enough
to get
to go
there,
in
and
present a couple monologues to their manager or agent or whoever. Or just good enough
that's
to make
true.
That personal
so
connection.
So it's everything else that's gonna matter.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's go back a little bit and talk about sort of the process you went through, because it's actually kind of a funny story, I vaguely remember, of how you got a manager.
Sure. So back to the IO classes. I was actually not in class with this guy, but we were in the alternative class.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I would see his shows because we did the two classes on the same show night. Excuse me. And his name's Bear, and he recommended me for a team called Les Hot Dog, him and my friend Jesse. And I ended up on the team, and I was playing like the third show that we had done. And I did a couple scenes with Bear, who was managed by a guy named Andrew, who had invited to the show that night. And he liked the chemistry between me and Bear, so he called me in for an interview and told me to prepare two monologues, which I had some already ready. And so I went in and did them, and he was like, okay, we're going to take you on for a trial period to see if it's mutually beneficial. And then before I knew it, I booked Good Luck Charlie, and they signed me.
So, see, that I like the fact that he didn't have to go pursue somebody. Somebody just saw his work and said, I'd like to see you.
And so there's so many different ways of going about it. So many people will tell you, like, go to workshops, go to these agency showcases, like find a way to get in.
Almost
a lot
like
of those
pitch
cost money.
Yeah.
A lot of those, you never know who you're going to actually get in front of. They might promise big names, and then who are these people who are in the room?
Pitch fest.
Yeah.
But for me, it was like, get on stage, do your art, and hopefully somebody sees it and appreciates it and wants you.
Yeah.
That's like the biggest thing for me, because why would you want a manager who doesn't actively desire having your talent?
Right. No, I agree. You have to talk them into having it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that doesn't...
And
yeah.
So many people just send out their headshots across town, send out 200 headshots, and hope that they get one or two people to respond. Not only is that also a decent chunk of money to mail that across town.
Right.
But, you know, it's just... I don't know. It's
I don't
the way
that,
to go
that,
about
that,
it.
No, out of their 500 pieces of mail that they get.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and again, it goes back to the what we were talking about earlier about talent rising to the top. I mean, you keep doing it and you keep putting yourself out there, you're going to eventually get seen.
Yeah.
And you're going to find somebody who believes in what you're doing, whatever it may be.
It's just a matter of how you go about it. Student films or actual stage work or improv or even doing YouTube videos.
Right.
Oh, seriously. There are a lot of people who made it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Especially now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I wish there was a way to do that. I mean, I guess you could write, you know, a skit or something and get a little bit of YouTube credit.
What is it? College...
collegehumor.com.
Yeah. I mean, they were teeny, and now they're huge.
Well, I know a couple guys who literally make their living off of YouTube because they have so many videos they release so often, and they have enough followers that they
get
enough sponsors.
Yeah.
And they make their living off of it.
Absolutely.
Now. Yeah.
And, I mean, hey, knock on wood, podcasting. Get sponsored.
Right. This is the next the next level.
Just have to get enough people listening. So, when you sort of get, when you have the manager and you're going out and you're taking meetings, obviously, you're hoping that management is sending you to the right kind of job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Audition.
Well, we're not sending you to porno, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to just rely on them, basically. You just have to hope that they're...
Know what they're doing.
Put their trust in them. Yeah. And you get to evaluate it when you get there at the same time.
Right.
You meet these people. You ask them whatever questions you want. You usually get about a half hour with somebody in an agency meeting, which I find is more than enough time.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Size somebody up.
The last one I went to, I mean, she was able to see me do two monologues, two different commercials, and repeat one of them, and we talked about everything.
Wow.
So, I mean, you get plenty of time in those meetings to sort of suss out if they're right for you or not.
Right.
You don't pay for that, though, do you?
No.
To have those? You should never.
Speaking of paying, so there's lots of scams in the screenwriting world. I can only imagine what it's like in the
I figure
world.
There's this problem like modeling where they're probably trying to take advantage of you or...
Well, the worst thing about it, I think, is that they still look reputable, some of them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, there are people who are very obviously snakes out here. Like,
Have you run into somebody who's tried to say, yeah, I'll represent you, I just need this much
money? I've had a lot of people, like, approach me through email saying, oh... This manager representation wants to get in contact with you. And it's clearly, I've looked them up on Google, and their reputations are, they bring people in, they say, listen, you're great, but we need some new headshots. Here's our guy who takes $1,200 headshots.
Right, and they get a kickback from that.
Exactly. Yep. And then they might sign you, if they want you or not. You know, it still is a legitimate agency, but they're also running pseudo...
Yes.
It's not illegal.
Don't. I know it isn't,
you know,
but
it's just
immoral.
Taking advantage
it's not,
of these people.
It's not
yeah.
fair. Yes, of course that's
And there's
fair.
Lots of stuff like that. Acting classes where people... inflate their reputations or I mean
but
my
do,
God.
Due diligence
yeah.
you can find out about these people. It's not that hard
absolutely.
To do
absolutely just Google it.
Jesus,
like, take 5 minutes and
right.
just do a couple minutes of research.
Yeah. When, okay, so I mean we have thousands of stories where people inflate their reputation or experience. Talk about some of the pitfalls that you've come across in the acting world.
For people with inflated reputations?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I haven't personally dealt with it. I've almost... I mean,
you've been
in
so
the improv
lucky.
Community...
He's been so lucky.
People are so honest and real that I don't know if I've had a whole lot of inflated reputations, but I was thinking about, like, you know, those signs that you see on the benches
right.
or on
yeah.
the sides of taxis that are like... You know, they promise that they're going to sign you if you get into their casting workshop or whatever it is.
Casting workshop, that's a big one.
Yeah.
Sounds official.
I mean, I've heard stories also of, like, acting classes where the guy who runs the class will have somebody planted in the class so that they can pick scenes where girls are, like, topless or nude or things like that and basically exploit women that way.
Nice.
Yeah, there's
classy.
There's some nasty stuff. You got to watch out for yourself.
Let's hope nobody's falling for that one anymore. Jesus.
There's thinking about inflated reputations. There's an old SNL skit, and I can't remember who the host was, but where they played an acting coach teaching an improv class, and they've done like 3 episodes of like Law and Order, and that was like their claim to fame.
They played a dead person.
Yeah, they played a dead person on CSI, and it was like them trying to teach other people how to be dead people on CSI.
I think I know what you're talking about. I feel like I remember a similar thing that was like an extras workshop.
Yeah.
Maybe it was on Mad TV or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That also makes me think of Zach Galifianakis's Between Two Ferns.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know if it's Between Two Ferns, but it was on Tim and Eric, and he teaches like a bunch of little kids about acting.
I haven't seen that.
I recommend it highly.
So now that you're booking things and you just landed an ESPN national commercial for Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
What's the sort of the current plan, and then what is the
movie
long-term...
Role, movie role. What's
the long-term, like, this is ultimately what I want to do?
What I ultimately want to do, I'll start with that one, because I'm sort of already doing what I ultimately want to do. I literally, if I could just make a minimum wage salary and go up on stage and do improv 2, 3, 4 nights a week...
Mm-hmm.
That would be great. That'd be set. But unfortunately, you don't make any money whatsoever. So you have to have something else, unless you're going to start coaching, like, big time.
Right.
I don't even think the people who coach could, you know, eat off of that.
Sustain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I'm sort of already living the dream.
Mm-hmm.
But, beyond that, the bigger, inflated dream, I definitely want to be, like, in that sort of type of character, like a Nick Offerman on Parks and Recreation.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like that larger-than-life side character. And I'd love to go the sitcom route. I love TV. I love the idea of...
That would be cool.
Just, I don't know, getting with a cast, maybe something where I could improvise some of the time. I mean, Parks and Recreation, that kind of show would be just the ultimate
Perfect.
Ideal.
Or like Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes, absolutely. Or Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Right.
You know, the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
And then from there, I mean, who doesn't want to be in movies, right?
This is true.
I would love, love, love to, you know, be the Ben Stiller who directs the movie that he wrote and also has a part in and even produces. Tropic Thunder, where he just did basically everything. So I've got plenty of ideas for big projects that I would love to be able to do.
But you do not have a script, is that
right?
Yeah,
I don't.
You're one of the few people that we've ever met that does not have a script.
I do not have a script, truth be told. I have always thought of my movies as Christopher Guest outlined movies, where you sort of know the plot points, sort of know where you want to arrive.
You know the scenes,
But I don't actually have it on paper. I do have the ideas on paper and the outlines on paper.
Well, that's good. That's
yeah,
a good start.
It's just not an actual script where the whole thing is
filled
right
in.
Now. Exactly. It's a, it's a skeleton.
Yeah.
There's just no guts
yet. Where, that's a good place to start, though.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I've got several of those.
Well, I also have to ask this because on that note, I know you guys do rehearsals and stuff, but when you're dealing with being in front of a live crowd, which to a certain extent is almost controlled by them, how exactly do you rehearse improv? Because it's not like you can rehearse the show because you don't know what the show is going to be until you get there.
It's all sort of very zen. You're sort of just like working to increase batting averages, if you will.
Okay.
So there are, I guess, bad behaviors in improv, but all those bad behaviors could also possibly lead to the perfect scene.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority of time, those behaviors we're talking about don't lead to good scenes. Does that make sense?
Yes. So it's training the whatever behavior that is fucking up the scene not to do it anymore, no matter what's going on.
More or less. Yeah. Even though if you really understand how that behavior is taking away from scene work, then you can use that negative behavior to create a positive scene still.
Is there kind of funny, like a specific example? Like, what's a bad behavior in improv?
A bad behavior would be like if I was like, dude, I can barely breathe out here in space. Let me get that space helmet. And then you were like, yeah, let's shave all the dogs at the salon. You've completely destroyed the reality that I created.
Right.
So, like, one thing probably there would just be, like, training you to listen more.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Training you to listen and respond to what I've said.
Yeah, connect off of yours.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's, like, the basis, like, the most basic of ideas.
Is
like,
listening?
Say yes.
Well, and don't go random, for God's sake.
Exactly,
that's random.
Stick with what's been established. Or if I was like, you know, let's go out tonight. No. Let's cook a meal. No.
Right, the one word.
Not only is it stopping what's happening in the scene, but you've not added in any way. At least you could say, no, I'm bloated.
Well, yeah.
You know,
I need to wash
at least
my hair,
there's something there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That the other person can work off of.
Exactly.
To build the scene.
There's all kinds of improv rules, but just as much as they're rules, you can break them.
Right.
Like I said, it's all very zen. But, you know, you get the benefit of a coach, so you do get that audience perspective. You run scenes, and then they say, you know, here's what worked in that scene, here's what we need to improve on.
Nice.
Yeah.
That is helpful.
What?
No, nothing.
Oh, okay.
You look
like you're going to say something.
We usually run whatever form we're working on, too, or if there's something specific. Like, we'll do an exercise to specifically target, like, say, group games where the whole team plays on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Or what have you. You know, transitional stuff inside the show. Or if you've got a specific opening, like in Drunkards and Dragons, for instance, our opening is setting the stage with a story, if you will. We, like, scene paint where we come out and we say, this is a mountain, and then this is a dragon above it, and so we'll work on several openings in a row.
Talk about, just real briefly, talk about Drunkards and Dragons and what you guys do and what the team's about.
It's a lot of fun to see.
Well, it's basically like if you had fun as a kid playing Dungeons and Dragons or reading Lord of the Rings or Aragon or any of those,
or just interactive
fantasy,
comedy. You don't
whatever
it, really.
It is.
You could follow it even if you don't do those things. It's fine.
But
yes,
the main source is
yes,
nerds.
That helps.
So
it's nerd comedy.
It's born out of that fantasy world, and we basically take two heroes and a villain on this adventure, and we start out. We get audience suggestions for what race, class, and their name. And then we get a suggestion of the title of the entire show. And then we do a journey within that. And we roll the die of destiny, the 20-sided giant inflatable die. And that determines the outcome of scenes. And every time we roll it, you're supposed to drink with us. We all have beers on stage. It's a pretty raucous, ridiculous, hilarious show. Yes. We have a good time. It all ends, culminates with a final battle.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. Do you have anything else?
Well, I gotta talk about Les Hot Dog if I talk
about I was gonna say, talk about both and then say when they are and where they are. Yes, that would be a good idea.
Plug your shit, man.
Seriously. You gotta tell you that. Let's go. I'm playing at
Drunkards and Dragons is every other Saturday at Iowa West at 11:30 on the main stage. And I'm also on a team called Les Hot Dog where we do a form called The Labyrinth. We also take a character on a journey through their own labyrinth of their life. And we're all on stage the entire time performing as the scenery or the props or whatever is called for. Sometimes the entire cast will form into a rocket ship or a machine creating something, what
have
you.
We haven't seen this one yet. We haven't seen it.
And that is Mondays at 9. We present Les Hot Dog, One With Everything. We have a guest that also does some type of experimental form. Last time we had Jetso, which does kabuki-style gibberish. And that's their whole show. They don't like. They only drop in occasional English or occasional Japanese words.
Well, wow, that sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
although yeah. Monday is a terrible night for that. Just saying. I don't know.
There's there's something unique about all of the teams too, because you know, every team that sort of gets put together has that one thing that sort of common bond. Like for Drunkards and Dragons, it's the fantasy element. You guys are all super nerds.
Yep.
And it's really cool to see what sort of
you
flavor
get like
all
mind.
The different teams
I guess that's
are.
Probably how the egos work too, if they're all a like mind also. So that
yeah,
helps.
It's interesting too, because every improviser has a laundry list of teams, more or less, that they've either been on or that they're still on. I'm also on Three Bears in the Woods, which is a pretty brand new team, where it's me, my friend Brian, my friend Ryan, and then we have a guest, Goldilocks, every week. We're basically just three hairy guys who thought it'd be fun to have a show. And then my team, Sugar Daddy, we host once a month in the DCT, and we've just been together since level one. We don't rehearse with the coach. We just basically do it on the fly and just have as much fun as possible every month.
Wow.
There's, you know, to sort of, I don't think we glossed over it, but to just kind of bring the point back home is that once you're in, you know, deep with iOS, you can pretty much just come up with whatever you come up with. And as long as, you know, they like it. Boom, you have a new show that you're going to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's been probably a dozen teams this month that formed, and just as many shows this year that formed. There's a Doctor Who live show, there's a comic book live show, there's a show where porn stars guest and do a monologue at the beginning of the show. There's untold opportunity. If you have any kind of show, you can submit it to the cage match and compete against another team. And whoever brings the most audience members to vote for them basically wins.
Nice.
So the opportunity to get on stage is like the best thing about iOS.
And plus, there's one of the other things that we didn't talk about was all of the different showcases that they do.
Yeah. I got to do the SNL showcase
right.
in the middle of the summer.
Which we should mention. So the deal was that quite a few people are leaving SNL. There was an audition process, and they basically did an audition showcase at Iowa West, correct?
Yeah, basically five people left SNL this past season, which is the most that has happened since Will Ferrell joined the cast in 1995. And it's also the most public search that they've ever done. They're always, like, cloaked in secrecy and just sort of grab people out of a theater when they need somebody.
Right.
But since they needed such a big cast, they went to all these big theaters. IO was one of them. UCB was one of them. Which LA's UCB ended up sending two people to the cast this season, if I'm thinking correctly. I just read the article today.
Wow.
And
Stacey was telling me that there was, like, 150 of you that... the showcases, they were running every night for a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, that number sounds low, though. I mean,
they ran... Yeah, it sounds like it would be more.
They ran for, like, 2 months. And it was 2 nights a week, almost.
Okay.
So, that's, like, 12 people a night. Somebody out there can do the math.
But, well, it might be because
there were a lot of
three.
People on my night. I don't know if it was 12 or 15 or how many.
Because you guys were doing 5 minutes a pop, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it was a 90-minute.
Oh, that's right. It was 90 minutes.
90-minute slot. So,
well,
there were a lot of us.
Even if let's inflate the number.
Is that per week or is that per night?
Per night, there's 90 minutes of
12 people. It was per night, or was that running like...
12 sounds low, even. I would say more like 15, 16.
Yeah.
8 and 8 sounds about right.
Okay.
But, okay, so let's inflate that number to
I'm
say...
I'm doing math, that's why.
Let's do 300. Let's say 300. Out of the 300 people who did showcases at Iowa West alone...
Yes.
Nobody went, right?
Nobody went to SNL, no.
Yeah, yeah.
And
nobody got past the first round.
The first round is a video submission. So you do like a YouTube video.
So, yeah.
So I guess even more than the people who actually got on stage submitted their video.
Gotcha.
And then when you get on stage, that number, say let's say 350, goes down to 15, which is the number that gets to do the showcase a second time.
Okay.
For, I heard Lorne Michaels, I don't know.
The
rumor was that he flew out to see that 15.
Gotcha.
But apparently none of them were good enough.
But
that was some stiff competition. I mean, there was like Frank Caietti, who was on Mad TV for a little bit, was up there. Just a lot of amazing comedians that I had no qualms with losing to.
Right.
But it's a good opportunity. I mean,
absolutely.
Just to even get to do that.
And just
the showcase format, let's talk about that. Real brief, because it's kind of fascinating. You get 5 minutes, and it's like...
4 minutes.
Four minutes. By the time you have to come out on stage, say your name, and just start swinging for the fences. And it's kind of fascinating how it works, because it's like you come out, and it's like, oh, here's my character, fat guy in a bench in a park. And then you do the bit for 30 seconds, and you go, okay, and here's, some imitation of some famous person that you probably know. And it's just one after another until your time's called.
Well, you basically get 4 minutes, and everybody has their own take on what that 4 minutes means. For me, it was, this is Tim Gunn. And then I went into Tim Gunn and did about 30 seconds of Tim Gunn, give or take. And there were a lot of people who did, like, this is Celebrity American Idol, hosted by Jack Black. And then they played all the celebrities at the American Idol thing.
Right.
Or, you know, several variations therein. But, I just did mine alternating character and impression.
Which is funny, too, because I think the night of your showcase, that seemed like what everybody was kind of doing. And it's funny because... I went to the SNL showcase, and then I saw Stacey do another showcase. And the fascinating thing is that if you have, let's say, 15 people in an hour go up on stage, how often you'll see people do the same sort of bit, their take on the same sort of bit.
Yeah.
Your night for the SNL showcase was like, the big thing was DJs.
Yeah.
Like, this is a lame DJ at the lamest wedding ever, or this is the most hyperactive DJ ever at a bar mitzvah, and it was always DJs.
It's so funny to improvisers to see things like that, because we're trained to look for and find the connections and things, and, you know, foster group mind and end up saying the same thing at the same time, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, we always wonder if that's really just coincidence, or it's just that we're so trained to look for the coincidence that we just see it anyway. But I know, like, there were like 8 other people who did a Tim Gunn.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of the same impressions. I don't know if it's just something in the air that night, or if they just are same kind of people who they lump together.
Yeah,
for
that
the
seems.
Slots.
Oh, that could be somebody saying they were gonna.
Because I have no idea how that's decided. How.
Did you say what you were going to do?
Right.
Did you say what you were going to do, or they're just like
they
you
see
wing
the
it?
Video?
Oh, okay. So
you're basically
what you're
going
do.
Up on stage and doing the same thing you did in your video?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
I was going to say.
I know some people like drop a character, or add a character, things like that, but I don't know.
Interesting.
I did pretty much the same. I did completely different takes on it because I improvised a lot of my stuff, but I did all the same characters.
How important is it, I know the answer for me personally, but how important is it for you as an improv actor to be on top of pop culture?
Oh, depressingly necessary. I mean, like...
You must know about Britney. You have to.
I don't know any of it. That's the worst thing. Like, if I was in a comedy sports show and I had to do a bunch of impressions, like in the short form game,
right,
I would be sunk probably. But that's the worst thing, is you have to know that stuff. If somebody makes a reference, like...
It's a Kim Kardashian reference.
Yeah, or whatever it is. Cited in Truth in Comedy, or maybe it's the second book, Art by Committee. I can't remember which one. Or maybe I just heard this story. Anyway, there was a string of murders or something in Manhattan by a guy named Kunani.
Mm-hmm.
And at a Chicago improv show, the suggestion was Kunani. And none of these people on stage knew who Kunani was.
Oh.
So they started summoning Kunani. They were like, Kunani! Kunani! Sharna shut off the lights and didn't let him show again, I think, or something like that. So, I mean, it's really important to know that stuff, because if you mess up like that, I mean...
The last showcase I went to, there was a girl that, during her 5 minutes, came up and did her imitation of what Kris Jenner sounded like on her talk show. And I'm sitting there in the audience saying, this would probably be funny if it wasn't for the fact that it was announced this morning that Kris Jenner's talk show got canceled.
Oh, no.
So your material is already outdated. And it's like
based on this morning.
And there was another one, too, who did a bit where it was like, that's not even the case anymore. That's old news a week ago.
Well, like my Paula Deen, if it had been 2 days later, that was when
Yeah, that's when shit hit the fan.
Yeah, that's when she made her racial slurs or whatever. Or did the video just came out? Yeah.
It became public.
That's right, because she had said it like 30 years prior, right?
Right, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and how much that character changes in a matter of a day.
Absolutely, yes. I don't think I'd take it to the stage.
Well, yeah, not that way.
It's too soon.
I mean, you'd have to do it. But then she became a major news story, and then everybody was probably making fun of her.
Let me put it this way. She's really funny when she's swimming in a bathtub full of butter. She's not so funny when she's spouting racial slurs. At least not to me.
Come on, you can't tie those two things together. I can see common area there. Butter, swimming in butter.
But yeah. It's a little bit. This fat, white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy. No, thank you. I'll play Germans or something.
That's funny.
It's just amazing. Again, you know, going back to the writing thing of how many people, performers, whatever, just are not aware of stuff that's out there or the world around them.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I'm not either. Manny's supposed to keep up on that stuff.
Yeah.
I designate him to do that.
Yeah, and I in the same way, you also have an innate ability to be able to fake it.
I do.
At a party or whatever.
I can do that very well.
BSing is a useful quality.
You would be amazed if she had it down pat for the longest time where she knew absolutely nothing about football, but knew the correct four phrases to say where guys at bars would get into fucking deep conversations about
football. And I could just let it go. Make a statement and let that go.
Definitely.
You know, like when the refs were, you know, the scab refs and the refs were on strike, she knew that phrase. Yeah. Like, well, you know what? We're not going to get good calls until we get some good refs back.
Hopefully we're going to have a team this year.
And I've seen drunken, you know, 45-year-old soccer coaches, you know, suburb dads, be like, I know, right? And blah, you're blah, so blah, smart blah, for blah. Saying that. That's what I've been saying for you, blah, blah. It's great.
Yeah, it's hysterical.
Yeah, definitely being able to BS in this town.
For sure. It helps.
And have it seem natural. That's the hard part.
Like when you improvise a commercial in an audition and you're supposed to have had it prepared?
Yes.
Like that. Exactly like that. And they buy it.
But you're a jackass.
Pull out a blank piece of paper and say, let me check my notes.
As long as they don't have something to see again.
Yeah, yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Can you do it again?
Can I watch the tape back real quick?
One last note about the SNL showcase things. It may not have led to anywhere in terms of going to SNL, but that performance and that 4 minutes on stage was one of, like, the most crowning achievements and just the greatest experiences. The crowd was so full in the house. There were people packed, you know, all the way to the door, and everybody who was there wanted to see you.
I was standing room only.
It was just fucking amazing. So that's what I have to say about that SNL show.
And it's on the resume.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more importantly.
Yes.
All right, buddy. Well, thanks for doing the show. Not that you had much choice. Well, it was easy. You only had to move from the couch to come over here to the table and do it.
Speak for yourself.
Rough.
I think that's going to be it for this week.
I think so.
So for this week's episode of Breaking In, I'm Manny.
I'm Cheryl.
I'm Colin Turner.
Colin Turner. Look for him. We got to find the football commercial.
I know. I guess it hasn't aired yet. They put one of Kenning Loggins' commercials out, so hopefully it's soon
coming.
To follow.
Yeah.
That
we will let you know.
Last year's Monday Night Football commercial shows up on YouTube at a certain point.
Yeah, they do.
This one, as soon as it was on TV, the first one they released, as soon as it was on TV, it was online.
Yeah.
So
cool.
When mine comes out, it should be able to be thrown around the blogosphere.
Yes, and we'll put a link to it on the show.
Yeah. Good Luck Charlie is Sunday nights at 10. I believe my episode is September 29th. It's entitled Bob's Bow Be Gone. So if you see that title, that's my episode.
That's him.
and also look for Colin obnoxiously waving an American flag behind Wayne Brady on an episode of Let's Make a Deal sometime in January or February.
You cannot miss the American flag.
Do we want to say that? We might have to edit. No.
Cut that out.
Colin and Beth went on Let's Make a Deal.
It's not on the resume. It's not on the resume.
As hillbillies, because you have to go in costume.
Yeah.
All right. So, till next week. But
peace out.
Peace out.
That's my line. You can't say that. No one's allowed to. Manny,
I only get
to
be
it.
On the show once.
Manny tries to steal it. Every
this is
week.
The second time you've been on the show.
Every week he tries to steal it.
You've gotten to say it 58 times.
Give someone else a chance. That's my signature.
I played on. I played till I'd lost all at one. I was right back where I'd started from. Then I started wanting to go home.
Kentucky gamblers, ain't nobody waiting in Kentucky.
When I ran out, somebody else walked in.
Kentucky gambler, looks like you ain't really very lucky.
And it seems to me a gambler loses much more than he wins. Much more than he wins.